It's a bit of a concern, Jim, when I'm wishing the week away already, getting into Friday on a Monday. It's not ideal, but I'm here and I'm ready to go, and I love having you on a Monday. Good morning, Jim.
I appreciate that. That's not you. What's happened?
No, I know. I just said
you're
Friday.
Wet the bed or something.
Not quite.
Well, it's going to be such a big game on Friday night, Geelong versus Richmond in the grand final rematch.
Of course.
Rematch.
Let's get it going.
Let's get it going.
Well, we've got a review before we preview. We can't go this Friday just yet. We've got a bit to talk about. Before we get to the games, Jim, we touched on this earlier this morning, and I'm sure you've spoken about it at length across the weekend. The news yesterday, the passing of your former club president, Frank Costa, was very, very sad, and will be felt absolutely across the entire Australian football community, but certainly Geelong and the football club. But bigger, Jim, the people of Geelong, the community of Geelong will certainly feel this.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and I heard you use the word iconic. I think that is a great word to describe Frank Costa in the Geelong community. Absolutely embraced the community. The community embraced Frank, but I know everyone will look to the Geelong Footy Club, and he's not only on the board, but his presidency and what he did, and the values, culture. I know those words get thrown around a lot, not only in sport, but business. But he did instill something pretty strong there at the Footy Club, and he was big on character and people, and then you teach talent after that. I think I even heard Colin Carter talk about that yesterday, is you go with the people, you invest in the people, and you can teach the skills after that. Frank is non-negotiable in that. And I know a lot of people say, oh, yeah, but they've got to have talent. No, Frank is just 100% character. And he thinks the rest comes with it. But on the broader community stuff, I had a lot to do with Frank with a charity I'm involved with down at Cottage by the Sea down at Queenscliff, which just purely relies on donations, doesn't get any government funding or anything else like that. Frank just tips in. He's patron of probably 2,500 different charities and organisations across the Geelongan region. And that was what was important to him. And family was important. His wife Shirley and eight daughters for Frank. So the Geelong footy players were his sons to him, and just incredibly passionate. And also the great thing, and it's a hard thing to do with a man with that much smarts and knowledge in the world, he knew what his lane was when it came to the footy club.
Yep.
So he oversat and everything. He was like a helicopter. If he needed you, he'd happily come down and land and help you out, but he just sat there. He didn't meddle with, Bomber Thompson's business, because he was present during Bomber Thompson's time, or any of the football department.
Eight daughters. No, any sons?
No sons.
You think he'd try and change it up a little bit to try and get the...
Well, he's different diet or something.
Something different.
Maybe he did.
Just kept coming up with the same results.
The strong X chromosome. I don't know.
Red on the roulette wheel 8 times in a row.
It can happen.
St Mary's Church, which is the massive big church in Geelong, he did a lot to keep that up and going, and funding and everything like that. His first 7 daughters got married at St Mary's Church, and the last one said, no thanks, we're going to Daylesford. And he was a bit flat about that for a little bit, because he got married at St Mary's Church. It was almost like a family tradition. But no, wonderful family, man. It's a huge family, the Costa family. His brothers as well are massive supporters of not only the footy club, but the community as well.
Yes, it will be a loss absolutely felt by the Geelong community, and certainly the football club and Australian rules football, full stop. And the passing of Frank Costa yesterday after a battle with illness.
I know a lot of people said, oh, do you name a stand and all that? Geelong went away from that when Tom Harley became captain, naming things after individuals. But there's a lot of things already at the Geelong Football Club. So a lot of people have asked me, oh, will you name the next Brian Cook stand that he builds down there, the Frank Costa stand? But there is already a lot of things inside the four walls of Geelong Footy Club that honours Frank and his family.
He's got a boardroom, hasn't he?
He's got boardrooms and all sorts of stuff. When they build all the new football department, different sections are named after big benefactors who have tipped in.
Yep. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens down there from Geelong, but I'm sure we'll hear more from them in the next couple of days as we farewell Frank Costa from, certainly from the Geelong community. What caught your eye, Jim, in round 7 of the AFL?
Lots caught my eye, but a player who caught my eye, and I heard you have the discussion of key defenders, Charlie Ballard is one I think you've left out a little bit, because Gold Coast, as we like to say, are off-Broadway.
Yes.
He's been fantastic. I thought his game down back for Gold Coast. They're actually starting to get a fair bit of depth in their back line through injuries. You throw in Farrah as well, another athletic one. Bowes is a high possession winning half back.
30
again. He racks up the footy. So they're actually starting to get a fair bit of depth from their backline Gold Coast. Well, what else? Caught your eye. It's hard not to catch your eye, the Geelong-Sydney game.
Well, let's start there, Jim. Let's start there because from my recollection, Geelong owned that game, Jim, and then all of a sudden the world changed. What happened in that moment that the world changed for the Cats on Saturday night?
Marks.
Speak to me. What does that mean?
Well, Geelong took 42 marks in the first quarter and they dominated the game.
42 marks in a quarter. How many of those were uncontested, you know? Would have been a fair chunk of that.
Pretty 30, much 40.
40-ish, you'd reckon?
Yep. And then how many do you think they finished with at the end of the game?
Well, Sydney shut it down, I think. Mm-hmm. Let's say, what's another 50? 90.
Close. 89.
89.
So 47 for the remaining three quarters. So you close down time and space, and you actually then allow yourself to get back into the contest because it actually is forced, the ball's being forced to kick to a contest. And you start to win the territory game, and you start to squeeze the field, which allows you to get away with only having 39 inside forward 50s and getting a win.
For the Swans, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that being said, and that makes perfect sense.
Thanks.
How does Geelong walk away with that, from that game? What are they thinking? Because that's a game they shouldn't have lost from that position of strength and the amount of control they had in the last quarter where they had the ball pretty much inside their 50 for large portions of it and they couldn't lock the game away.
Yeah, this is the really difficult thing, and we've got a long-time experienced coach at all levels here, Daniel Harford, and I'm not being a smarty pants here, but this is the art of coaching and the coaching team. So if you're Chris Scott and Scarlett and Enright and all the other coaches there, it's really difficult to weigh up how much do you go hard or you pat on the back, because you'd go back and you go, well, I'm going to go down the playing group and we've pretty much won 8 or 9 of our KPIs or whatever our areas, but we've lost. Now, did we lose just on moments and skill execution? Yeah. So it's really difficult because as much as you hammer them, skill execution, like set shots, I just need my forwards to go take more set shots. So what I'm trying to say, the question is probably better for Harf, who's been in more situations as a coach after these games, where you go, yeah, I'm frustrated we lost. We had it's one we lost. I know the Swans won, but we'd lost it.
So, I think that's fair for on this occasion. Yeah, the Swans got back into it. I mean, they stopped. They found a way to get back in.
I'm not discrediting the Swans.
Yeah. But I think the amount of ball they had, 26 more inside 50s, a lot of those in the last term, they needed to be aware of the way that Sydney defend and have defended over recent years. Now, this year, it's been a bit more streamlined play through flow. But when you've got a team who's dominating territory like Geelong did, in that, particularly in the last quarter, Sydney have defended for years in their back 50.
Yeah.
And it just had numbers back, and then they'll surge forward and kick a goal. That's the way they've scored for years. So you need to be... Clearly, they would have been aware of that, the Cats hierarchy. But trying to... Having a plan to get through it seemingly wasn't at the top of the agenda during the week, because they didn't look anywhere near it, Jim, on Saturday night.
So just to highlight that point, Waddy, we won the ball. I'm saying Geelong. I'm being the coach. We won the ball. We've had 80 more disposals, which 70 of them were more effective. So we've had 70 more effective disposals. Contested possession, we've absolutely walloped the Swans, 151 to 118, uncontested. So we went inside and outside. We took marks early in the game. Then they closed us down. We won clearances, tackles. So you can't say, oh, they out-tackled us. We've won that. We won tackles inside forward 50. As we mentioned, we won inside forward 50s. We were sort of efficient 43% of the time we scored, but we just didn't convert. It just comes out.
Yeah, I mean, because there's two things. Hawkins missed those goals late. He had the chance to kill the game. But it was the fact they were so far in front. It can't just be Hawkins missing that's cost them. How they allowed Sydney to get back into the game. I mean, credit's got to be given to the Swans as well for finding a way, a young team, to get back. Because it looked like it was... It's been unravelling for Sydney now for a few weeks.
When you're dominating the game the way Geelong were, all those statistical categories that you talk about, you tend to push up the ground a little bit further into your forward half of the ground. Geelong, watching them over many, many years, they've also always been good at sitting back. They defend similar to Sydney. They're able to, you know, absorb a lot of inside 50. But in that last quarter particularly, Sydney sweated on the turnover and waited and waited and waited and waited and then just went and bang. And it was like you caught Geelong in shock. It's like, oh, how'd they get through because of the domination of ball that, that Geelong had. So you look at the Papley goal at the end, there was space everywhere for him to work through. Yeah, okay, it was a terrific goal. But usually Geelong would swarm that and he doesn't get through and score. But it was basically a one-on-one matchup.
Yeah, and defending the middle part of the ground, as Rammer's touching on, off turnover. So if you look at the shot chart where Sydney got their goals, it's just this absolute cluster between the, you know, the goals, the point post to point post, and only 20 metres out. And that puts opposition under the pump. So what it's saying is Sydney were able to get to that launch zone easily. So 70 metres out from goal, 70 metres out from goal, you tend to hit that spot a lot easier, and through the middle, which then put Geelong's backs under a huge amount of pressure. So Geelong weren't able to, as Rami was touching on, slowly march up the ground, what they love to do, robotic-like, you know, get up the ground, and you see Stewart and Blitzars sort of having their possessions around near the logos.
I'm mindful that there's other games I want to talk about, but I just want the three of your view on the mark that wasn't paid for 15. And rather than criticise the umpire, because I think that is such a difficult rule to officiate. And what the umpire tried to do is he tried to call it early to give everyone as much warning as possible. I'm not going to pay the mark. But that's the
issue right there. He went too early.
Yes, but you also got to give him credit for trying to communicate.
As soon as that ball came off the boot, he's yelling, "Play on, play on, play on!" But clearly, the ball travelled the required distance. But
what I want to know is there a solution to this? Because an umpire judging how far 15 metres is, it's not an easy process.
Well, what's your solution?
Do you want to have
I don't know what the solution is, so I'm asking you. Have you got a solution? Definitely not.
Don't go to that guy.
I need to ban the bunker, full stop.
Every kick we
have. It's going to happen. That's human error.
But to say, oh, well, we've got to push it out to 20 metres, that's going to make it harder for the umpire to determine 20 metres.
Well, seemingly, I'm not sure if it was after... Well, people I spoke to yesterday said there was a lot of... seemingly a lot of emphasis on the short, on the 15-metre kick being 15 metres on Saturday night. And then yesterday I was watching the game...
The Melbourne-North Melbourne game
was highlighted again. So they were trying to make sure that 15 is now 15, not 7.5.
Yes.
Which has been paid for way too long.
Yes.
And I'm all for them going, making it further than shorter if they're going to get it wrong. Get it wrong further. That's fine. Call the play on.
This will sound strange, but in the Collingwood-Gold Coast game, there was a lot of short passes that just were 7 or 8 metres.
Yeah, see, that's garbage.
So what I'm wondering here is, did then Dan Richardson get on the phone and say that night to the umpires,
the secret memo back,
watch for this in these two night games, because they were obviously significant games. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'll call Dan this week and ask him.
I think in the heat of a very close finish with a lot of players around the ball, I think instinctively even the umpires going, I'm just going to
let it go.
Whether it be a free kick or whether it be a... Because the other thing too is, had Jeremy Cameron been paid the mark, he would have kicked the ball after the siren.
He kicks that goal.
He would have.
No, he doesn't.
I don't know about that.
But you can't come off your arc because you can kick it after the siren.
You can.
He was right on the goal line.
You can snap that ball.
No, you can't.
Yes, you can.
You can
take your foot off your line.
No, you've got to make the angle worse.
Go boundary side, make it worse.
As soon as you hit your line, that's where you snap it.
But I'll help you out on this one. I'll jump over this side of the fence. Is you actually, he wouldn't have had much space because the fence is so tight.
He kicks it.
Just 2 or 3 steps, he'd be fine.
Bang. I don't think he does.
Practice.
Who knows?
Get out there. Jeremy Cameron, have a shot for us.
Who knows? It was
take
controversial.
The mark again.
Yeah,
be fatigued right at the end of the game and then show us.
Yeah. The eye test suggested it travelled the required distance. They've come out and said it had since, but I can understand why the mindset of the umpire was, unless it's that really clear cut, I'm not playing anything.
That's right. So let's just, it's like with the robot and one in the end. Now, a second later, he's probably holding the ball, but it's like, it's a very, you can understand why the umpire
I'm okay with that one.
Yeah.
I'm more than okay with that one.
Yeah,
anyway, that was the right.
I think it was a throw-in, wasn't it? There was 5 seconds remaining on the clock, so ball comes in. It's probably Selwood holds him for 2 or 3 seconds, maybe, Jim.
Yeah, lucky him. Could have got him high too.
Yeah.
Now you were at Carlton yesterday.
I was.
Carlton Essendon. What did you like
about Carlton or Essendon?
Carlton first.
Carlton absolutely punished Essendon off the turnover. 84 points off turnover. I think that was just a side who's a little bit much more mature across the entire ground. Now, I know Essendon's got some mature players there, but that a real sense of maturity about it, going down 21 points there at one stage, you know, held their nerve. Adam Saad, you know, I think a lot of Blues supporters went, ah, lucky he was on our side. They kept booing him all day, but he was still brave. That rebound off half back, they midfield turnovers were important. They weren't doing waiting all the way to their back 50 to get the turnovers, so they had a lot of scores from midfield turnovers. Still need to clean up their stoppage work. Essendon kicked 4 goals from centre bounces and kicked majority of their score from stoppages, which with a
young... Well, they weren't kicking him in general play because they're turning it over.
Yeah, with a young ruckman too on debut. That,
Brian.
Yeah, that was pretty okay. Yeah, pretty impressive. So for Carlton, I think they were a side that's just a couple of steps ahead of Essendon as far as their maturity, and they punished them for it.
You're very bullish, half, about the Blues, or more so than others in this studio.
More so than others.
I'm bullish.
What's been impressive about Carlton is that the two games where they've been under enormous pressure to kind of salvage their season was the game up at Gold Coast against the Suns, which they won.
Yep.
When things looked like they were starting to unravel. And then again yesterday, based on the fact they've got Melbourne and the Bulldogs in the next 2 weeks, this is one they really needed to win.
Correct.
They're 21 points down and they find a way. So that has to be a positive for their mental constitution, for want of a better term, about their ability to hold up under pressure.
Yeah, I mean, they get a bit of confidence out of that. I mean, one of the challenges is, from a Carlton perspective, is being able to stop transition turnovers against them.
Yes.
We've talked about that a little bit in the last while, and that's why Essendon were able to score so heavily in the end yesterday. But I think they're a team that play pretty freely. And that's a positive and a negative, because when they do get opened up the other way, teams score against them. But when they get things on their terms, they're able to hit the scoreboard. What, they kicked 9 goals yesterday or something?
Yeah.
It's a big score, because they're pretty powerful in that area of the ground. Big Harry Mackay, I know he started slowly, but it finished strongly after a bit of gastro, David Teague told us yesterday in the post-match. They're a team that plays freely. They play with the belief that they are a good team.
That's watching
them play. That's what you think.
They want to actually move the ball.
Yeah, they want to be a good team and move the ball proactive. Freely. The challenge of that is what happens when they don't keep possession. Yeah. That's the biggest issue, I reckon, for the Blues. But they play like they're going to be a good team. So to have that confidence when you're 21 points down in a game that really does matter, I think is a very positive thing.
I agree with that.
It was both sides in the first half in particular who, you know, doing the forward scouting, knew the opposition were very vulnerable to being scored off turnover. So that's why we saw this huge amount of pace and perfect conditions that as soon as the ball was turned over, it was go fast.
Yep.
And that's why there were some scrappy ones, which then they got hurt on turnover. So it was like, if you're putting up on the board for Essendon and going, turnover, go fast, because Carlton don't defensively transition. And it looked like that in the first half. But Carlton would have almost had the same message on their board against Essendon. We can get them on transition because they're going to try and go fast, but they're not good once the turnover happens.
I reckon one of the most frustrating terms in football is scoreboard pressure. I hate that term. But Carlton genuinely put scoreboard pressure on the opposition because they'll want to keep scoring. So you've got to score against them. If you don't score, you're in trouble because Carlton will score, and that's what they did yesterday again. They just kept making Essendon honest by putting score on the board. And when the Bombers started to turn the ball over, they started to get further and further behind.
Yeah. Where Essendon struggled yesterday is that key defensive post. Obviously using Laverty and Ridley as those key defenders. Stewart, he was okay. But they need to shore up that position. Now, obviously, that
did
would have
you
been
lose faith in Essendon after yesterday's performance?
Oh, hang on, here we go.
Propaganda.
It's like the Jack in the Box winding it up, isn't it?
It's an easy review. It's an easy review for Ben.
Come on, this is disrespectful. We're talking about Essendon here.
Who you got next week? Because we're ready to see you two jump
out. You guys, I think.
All of you.
All of you.
GWS.
It's an easy review. They failed miserably with their ball movement. They turned the ball over in really critical positions. So let's clean that up during the week. So but they're finding players. You look at Jones yesterday. He looked really good. Brian that comes in as a ruckman.
Perkins showed something yesterday.
Yeah, if when you lose as a developing team, you still want to find something out of the game. They found some more.
All right, straw poll. Daniel, whose list would you prefer? Oh. Essendon's or Carlton's long term?
What's long term?
Next 5 years.
It's not long term, it's medium term.
Is it?
Yeah.
I would have said medium term, 3 years.
So in 5 years' time,
next 5 years, which list would you prefer, Essendon's or Carlton's?
Probably Carlton.
Adam Ramanescus?
Formal.
I think Carlton will be there before Essendon. I think if you're saying 7-8 years, I'd take Essendon.
Yeah.
James Bartel.
Well, I'm similar to Rama here because we actually have some knowns about a couple of their Carlton's young list. We know Wiedering is a star centre back. We know
Sam Walsh is one of the top echelon midfielders now.
And big Harold Mackay. Like we know what they are. Whereas Essendon, they're top end draft picks, but we know all sides have top end draft picks. Yeah. There's just a few. Oh, what's it going to map out to with Essendon?
The one unknown for Carlton is how Harry Mackay and Charlie Curnow work. That's the big unknown. That just changes.
Just want to see Charlie.
Yes.
Just at some stage. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what could potentially take Carlton from where they are, right in the ruck in the middle at the moment, to Deconing in the ruck as
Martin
well.
Fisher.
Martin Fisher.
There's more knowns at Carlton than Essendon.
What's happened with Sam Walsh is he's gone from being one of the best young players in the competition to one of the best players in the competition in the last 6 weeks.
He's gone from playing on a wing predominantly now to playing more as a hybrid mid.
I love that. His ability, his awareness in traffic and his ability to change direction under enormous pressure. He did a couple of times and got a goal out of it, nearly got a second one late in the game. My goodness, to see that happening at that speed and be able to adjust on the fly is just an extraordinary talent.
It takes courage to run in football. We see courage, you look at Nathan Murray, the mark that he took for Collingwood. That's unbelievable courage, bravery. But Walsh's courage to run and run and run and just overwhelm his direct opponent is enormous.
We always knew him as a nice player, but his ability now, with his strength in the contest, to be able to get a kick away or to be able to break a tackle, to be able to get a handball in congestion to a teammate, that's what I think seeing him go to the next level.
Well, he's now impacting games. Like, as you mentioned, like coming in, he found his feet at the wing and then obviously inside mid. Now it's push forward, inside forward, 50, score involvement, scoreboard impact, scoreboard pressure, that sort of stuff. But when you sit there live, he's like a Kelpie.
Yeah.
You can't wear him out. It's like you've taken the brand new Kelpie out and you've run it for 10Ks and gets home and tears your shoes apart. Yeah. He wants more.
He's a Kelpie, no doubt about that. He's terrific. He really has evolved into a star of the competition, spot on, Whitey, not just a young player. Love Cunningham through the middle of the ground, too. I like that magnet beam.
Why does he play more?
Well, I think you'll see him more.
I didn't think he had that in him.
He killed Essendon.
No, he doesn't play more because he's still a little bit inconsistent. Yeah. You'll see a bit more of him
after that, I reckon. He was really good yesterday. Zach Williams, halfback flank. Let him play in the middle. Happy days moving forward for the Blues. But you're right. The Giants are hosting the Bombers next week, Jim. 1:45 at your home ground, at Giants Stadium. We'll get to a break. We'll speak to one of those.
You and I next week, Jim.
One of those guns.
You do get paid a lot to be a manager.
Way too much because you're really bad at it. Tim Taranto is going to be joining us after this from the Giants. Had a big win over the Crows and they're home against the Bombers this week. Jim's boy will join us after this because this could go anywhere. I want to go back to Saturday night and the Brisbane Lions Port Adelaide game. It was one of the feature events on the card, so to speak, in the world of racing. And in the end, it was a demolition for the home team. 49 points was the margin from the Brisbane Lions. And only 5 goals for Port Adelaide all night. Now, they kicked 5-14 in albeit some trying conditions.
2 in dead time at the end.
2 in dead time at the end, correct. It was a clinic. We saw Big Joe have another nice night, Jim. We saw Charlie Cameron get rolling. We saw Jared Lyons continue to be one of the best players that no one ever talks about. And that boy, Hugh McCluggage, is going to be...
He's excellent.
You talk about Sam Walsh before.
He's already a player.
Best young player and one of the best players. McCluggage is not far away from
the conversation. Well, he's been in the All-Australian squad the last couple of years, McCluggage, as a winger. And he should have been selected probably last year.
Oh, if he kicked straight, he was a lock.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. That's true. What'd you make of the Brisbane Lions? Jumps?
Wet weather Joe. Jeez, he plays some of his best games when it's been hammering rain, which you look at him run out on the field and you normally assume that guy shouldn't play well today, but he does.
He takes himself up the field in those games, so he gets himself involved.
There's a model, I reckon, Chris Fagan might have come across on the weekend.
He's much better further up the
field. He is, and that's I think Joe likes it further up the field as well because he's actually a really good field kick.
Oh, he's beautiful.
Yeah. Mm. So
sort of Buddy Franklin sort of stuff.
We look at his goal kicking.
Yeah.
And go, oh, but up the field, he's a lovely
kicker. He was forced to play further up the ground at Essendon because they didn't really have anybody else out of the square. But that's his role, that Hipwood can play deeper.
But then...
And McStay can play deeper.
Yeah, but Hipwood and Charlie Cameron look better together deeper
Isn't
than
it interesting?
Joe and Charlie together.
Because Charlie couldn't find his spot. in the first sort of month of the season.
Well, he's lost in the forward line.
He was.
He was lost. So
the Blues played him into form last week.
Yeah, well, four goals four, obviously, on Saturday night. It's terrific for... who did it say, but this again, I hate this question. Who did it say more about on Saturday night? Oh, Brisbane, like the way they're going, or Port Adelaide?
I think it absolutely said more about Port Adelaide.
Do you reckon?
Absolutely it did.
No, I've said more about Brisbane.
I disagree.
So Port Adelaide have had two tests in the last month away from home against West Coast and against Brisbane. And on both occasions, they were dreadful.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
So... You walk away, that's what you get from Brisbane. Now they had their slow start, that's their level.
But good, Brisbane play are good. Well.
That's what I'm saying. They play well. You know, you're going to have to play well to beat them. And Port Adelaide came up with nothing.
Well, they were disappointing, but I think it was more a reflection on what Brisbane have done the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And the game they've got back, particularly up there. I mean, they play their Gabba so well, and they've had but heaps of opportunities in the last 18 months to play there, clearly, with the whole COVID situation. I think it says to me Brisbane are back.
Yeah, I think Brisbane could have chucked the towel in with the difficulties they've had over the opening rounds, but it showed to me on Saturday night they're very much still up with the fight, or to the fight, against the bigger boys. And now, look, okay, Port Adelaide, Boak's out, Dersma's out, Butters is out, so they're three of their more prime movers, but Lachie Neal's been the mainstay of that midfield over the last couple of years, obviously. So I really enjoyed Brisbane on Saturday
I think
night.
That's fair. Yeah. I think that's fair, because we did have the discussion last week about Brisbane as to whether they were the most vulnerable team from the top four from last year, and they had to prove it without Lachie, Neal, and all those sorts of things.
That's why I thought it meant more for Brisbane on Saturday
I get
night.
That, but it was just how bad Port Adelaide was. Like, they throw in these games. It just brings up the flat track bully
tag.
But
Port Adelaide's test was Richmond a couple of weeks ago. I thought that was their real... Okay, are they...
That was at home, are they, though. That,
yeah, but so was Brisbane on Saturday night.
If they're going to finish top four, Port Adelaide, they've got to win games away against good teams.
It was a fairly important game for Brisbane on Saturday night.
Yeah.
To win.
No, absolutely it was.
I reckon it showed us that they're back to their best. Port Adelaide were disappointed, don't get me wrong.
They didn't need to win Port, but they needed to be competitive.
They got smacked in just about every facet of the game, which was disappointing. From Ken Hinckley, as he said after the game, we'll learn, we'll take this as a lesson and we'll learn from it. I don't like to learn from it this way because it wasn't a great result, but it's all we can do now is learn from it and get better. Oh, they'll be fine, Port Adelaide. That's a bad result, but I think Brisbane really needed to win it.
Yep.
At home ground, conditions that suit their system and play. Got a couple of key players back in some really good form. I just think Port Adelaide go, you know what, we sucked on the weekend and we'll learn from that and move on.
Yeah, Harfen, I don't think we should underestimate the two wet weather games that played back to back. And you mentioned that system for Brisbane. I think they drifted a little bit away from it in the start of the year, where players, you think you're doing it, but you're sort of just drifting away. You're half a step off the contest. You're not sort of getting that extra number into the contest, which Brisbane do so well. They swarm at you and then drive the ball forward. You even look at their back line. I think a few of them were taking a few liberties early in the season where, yeah, you know, I'm the man. I can just, you know, peel off my man. I can get, you know, the intercept mark. You know,
my understanding was there were some boarding house puddings in the defensive area.
Some fat heads.
Oh, yeah. In the lines.
What you do in wet conditions, you cannot be a fat head because the game isn't open. It's just back to contest. It's back to direct opponent.
Yep.
That sort of stuff. So you can sometimes have those conditions, Ramit, that actually kickstart your year because it just strips it all back.
So again, the most important stat on Saturday night is contested possession. Brisbane win that plus 21.
Yep.
So in a wet game, it's territory. So they're winning that territory battle. It's staying predominantly in their forward half of the ground. They win. And, you know, and Port Adelaide pride themselves. That's one of their key stats that they want to win on a weekly basis. Saturday night, Brisbane are better than them in that area.
They were too good. 49 points was a bit excessive, the margin, but they were too good. Port Adelaide left to lick their wounds. We get to a break. It is 10 to 8 on a Monday morning. Jimmy Bartel with us in the Monday Footy Review.
Talk about Collingwood.
We've got 40 minutes to do it.
We can do some Collingwood. We've got Luke Parker coming up after 8 o'clock, by the way, and Ed Curno. So we better get to Collingwood after this. I haven't heard from Sam in Swan Hill for quite some time.
No, where is Sam?
What's happened to Sam?
Sam.
I hope he's okay.
It's not looking good next at the draft table either for Collingwood. Just had a look at a little bit of research.
Stand by, Jim. We'll talk about it after this on The Breakfast Club.
Victoria's own Breakfast Club.
We expect to be performing better and we should... That expectation should be there from our supporters and for the people that love the club. They definitely want to be winning more, so they're hurting.
But I think there is an unrealistic expectation and an over... Like, clearly there's a heavy focus on the club itself because, geez, we've given you a few storylines and you've run with them. So there's no avoiding that for us, but that's been the same for this place since day dot.
Nathan Buckley post-game after their loss to the Gold Coast Suns Saturday at the MCG. It was a 24-point margin, 12-7 to 7-13, inaccurate kicking for the Magpies, but they never really looked like they were in it, did they, Jim? Rammer, you were there.
We were.
Watching it all unfold. What happened? What happened to the Pies?
I know Nathan Buckley's talked about the storylines and there's a focus on expectation, but that wasn't my disappointment with the Pies on the weekend.
What was it?
I almost gave a parent talk then. Okay. Yeah. I'm not angry. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Mm. Because clearly...
They gave up 146.
Yeah, and this is where I'm getting to, Rammer. I think that is not only... It's a coaching, it's a preparation and a players thing. I think it's all of you.
All of you.
Because you're forward scouting. Gold Coast are ranked 18th for long kicks, and they have been... since they've come into the competition. They love to kick short and they love to stretch the ground. And when I'm talking about stretching the ground is, you win the ball back on your half-back flank if you're the Gold Coast Suns. Stretching the ground is getting all your mids and your defenders to go wide, like spread across the ground. And you're making Collingwood make the decision. Do you go with them? If they go with you, you try and hit the one up the middle. Mm-hmm. If they don't, Gold Coast love to go around you with speed and kicking ability. But they don't kick the ball long, and they don't kick the ball long down the line. So when I'm seeing the first 5 minutes, Gold Coast just rack up mark after mark with the bridge kick or that little 20-metre kick that allows you to get out the opposite side of the ground easily, uncontested, I'm going, surely after 5 minutes you recognise it, or at quarter time you recognise it. And they had 46 marks in the first quarter alone, and not one stage did you go, let's make them do something that they don't want to do, or... until Gold Coast show me your kick long down the line. Until you show me, I'm not going to defend it. So the message should have been, all mids, get up and defend everything from 20 to 30 metres. Like, cut it out. Don't even give the leg rope. Like, cut it out.
They were 20 metres behind their direct
opponents. They were 20 metres directly behind. And then you had forwards still sitting back inside forward 50 going, geez, I hope I get on the rebound. You need to be the ones who get up laterally. So if you don't have it, come just block up the corridor, at worst. But all I'm saying is Gold Coast would win the ball back in a slow turnover, like really slow, like a free kick or a mark and the guy's falling down the ground. And I'm saying Ruckman and Mitch just slowly put their head down, jog long down the line to 50 metres. Oh, geez, they're going to kick it long down the line and we're going to have a contest. Gold Coast have never played that way.
No. So what's going wrong, Jimmy?
I just described
it. No, I understand that. But how is this happening? What? It's not so much who's to blame, but how can we... have a team that was so hard to play against. They battled to score, but they're always so hard to play against. How has it got to this, Jimmy? Or Rammer?
I think they're lacking effort at the moment. I hate to say that because all players try when they go out there. But at times on Saturday afternoon, particularly through the arcs, so the middle of the ground.
But it's not effort, it's confidence, isn't it? Well, doesn't confidence lead to
performance?
No.
You gave up 146 marks, Daniel.
Well, so, I understand that.
So I'm talking, Brandon Ellis takes 16 marks all through the middle of the ground. Then Sam Collins, a defender, 12 marks. Corbett, a key forward, 11 marks. Well, you're not even a key forward. Like it's effort. It's actually a want to get to your opponent. Now, if you think you're going well and you're losing games, you're kidding yourself. There's a point in a game when you know your direct opponent is going better than you. You know that.
Yeah.
Okay, so then that's then got to be the switch to go, okay, I've got to shut him down now for the next period of time. Not worry about system and this and where I've got to stand and what grass I'm... There were so many Collingwood players through the middle of the ground that simply guarded grass. Hugh Greenwood, through the middle of the ground, beat Collingwood up at the contest.
Didn't he?
Beat him up.
Statue.
He was awesome.
He just beat him up. So it's effort. So it's simple effort.
So, Jimmy, are they broken?
Clearly looks like it at the moment. But I get they're playing the young kids and things like that, but it can actually be simplified from it. As Rammer's saying, don't muddle them up with, this is
you
where you
stand. You need to stand it. You need to kick it there. You need to just plan your direct opponent. Yeah.
Win the contest. If you can't win the contest, make it very difficult for your direct opponent. If we're not moving the ball and you're not involved in the attacking chain, start defending. Like... Yeah. Block the fat side of the ground, get up, cut out the releases and give people a chance.
Do we have enough of a sample size now with Darcy Moore playing forward?
Seriously,
people put their hand up who were on the bandwagon of playing forward, like they're the expert. Rammer and I, we're going to put our arm around each other.
Should we shop those people?
Because we were always, he's not a forward. And I'm not one saying that. I was always from the start because he hasn't shown enough leading patterns in forward craft to be a forward.
He's one of the best key defenders in the competition.
Because he's a player who likes the game in front of him. And he runs and launches at the footy. And when
reads
you're playing,
it better than anyone.
Yeah, because you just keep the game in front of you. There's my direct opponent. Game in front of you. Forwards a completely different craft.
Jeremy Howe's not there.
It's a knock-on effect. So Jeremy Howe's not there. Jordan Roughhead, then, when he's with Darcy Moore and or Jeremy Howe, he looks like a good, accomplished defender. On Saturday, without both of them there, he looked all at sea.
Gold Coast key forwards, but including Corbett and kick six.
It is spectacular, this fall, from where they were to where they are now. Because after 10 minutes on Saturday, you knew that they weren't going to win.
Well, you knew they were just flat.
That's right. They looked tired. Yeah. They looked flat. They looked...
The only player that looked anything for Collingwood was Mychek.
Yeah.
It was the only player that you thought, yep, okay.
That was the first time I saw Collingwood, you think, oh, gosh, they're shot.
They look shot to me on the weekend. But they want to get back into one piece because the Kangaroos are coming.
Roll your sleeves up and start to apply pressure to the opposition.
If North Melbourne brings the energy that they brought yesterday, I thought they were fantastic, the Kangaroos.
I want to talk about the Kangaroos after eight because I think they do deserve some discussion.
Yeah, Collingwood are in for a real battle on the weekend.
They were poor. Gold Coast, probably underselling their effort a bit. First time the MCG for a lot of those guys. Mm. Never get to play there. It's a really strong win.
They did the
win.
Tour after it.
Sports business.
Walk back to their hotel.
Oh, very good, Stuart. You should be very pleased with his performances, these players' performance on the weekend. But, the Pies look almost broken to me, Whitey. I'm with you on that. We'll get to the news. Johnny Bowden's got the latest news, sport and weather because he's the voice of news in this country. We're going to be joined by a couple of special guests after 8 o'clock. Luke Parker from the Sydney Swans and Ed Curno from the Blues. It's all still to come on the Monday morning edition of The Breakfast Club.
Luke referenced then moments, not necessarily on stats. It was moments. Yeah. And that was what happened on Saturday night, is that some of those young players had moments and they stood up. You know, McInerney kicking a goal from the boundary, Rowbottom.
Ollie
Florent.
Ollie's just
some
player.
Oh, yes, he is. Some good moments there. Dylan Stevens, another one, went back and kicked a crucial goal. But they seem to have guys that like the big moments, which is a good thing to have because you can't necessarily teach that.
Rowbottom, Papley, Florent, McLean were their goals in the last quarter.
Mm.
All younger type of players, which is a great sign.
So down the Hobart yesterday, the Kangaroos were all over Melbourne for 2.5 quarters. And then there was a moment. And I'm not going to just hang him for it. But I think in terms of momentum, they lost it all when Jack Zabel dropped the chest mark back inside defensive 50, ended up gathering the ball, getting tackled, trying to feed it back to big Ben Mackay, who wasn't able to get it. Bailey Fritz runs past him, kicks a goal. That was the turning point of the momentum because the Kangaroos were awesome in the first half against Melbourne yesterday. They owned the ball. They showed a real style, a bit of a system that perhaps we hadn't been able to see against too many other opposition that David Noble had stamped, if that is indeed what it was, a system and a style under the Kangaroos. And it showed up and it stood up against a really good quality team.
Half, I reckon there was that moment, and there was another moment as well where Cameron Zerha missed a goal on the run.
One. Yep.
And then it went down the other end and Cozzy Pickett was involved in three disposals and kicked the goal.
Yep.
And there was kind of like that was a 12-point swing as well that just took the stuffing out of them.
They were all over them.
No, they were. And it have to give North Melbourne fans a lot of optimism for the future is that some of the players that they're bringing in are standing up. Tom Powell is one that I'm really big on. I thought he was really good.
He was excellent.
He looked like he'd been knocked out and he went back on and played extremely well. But he's emblematic of quite a few young kids that they've got that seem to be playing good football.
Well, when you've got so many young players playing through, and we just mentioned the Swans there, what they're doing well is you need the experienced players to be playing some good footy at the same time. I know we always love to focus on the new young talent, but if the experienced ageing players can take a bit of pressure off. So Parker and Kennedy, obviously for the Swans, allows Florent and these sort of guys to shine. It's no coincidence. You mentioned Powell goes well, But Ben Cunnington has an absolute monster, he's a monster of a game.
I think he just reminded everybody, because he only played three games last year, just how good he is.
So that helps. Jeez. But there's a lot of ticks, but David Noble will be like, well, you can do it. You just got to be consistent doing it, because the minute you drop off and moments, football punishes you.
Melbourne don't play well, but get away with a 5-goal victory.
Yeah, that's a good sign. Yeah.
But that's a good team.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. Yeah. You have a down day, yeah. but you're still able to produce a 5-goal win. So I think that's
kick 100 points again.
I think it's a really, really good sign. They'll review it. They'll do what they do with it. Then move on to next.
Yeah, they
week.
Didn't panic about coughing up a game. Oh, bloody, this is so Melbourne, not of us.
It's a very Melbourneish performance.
Very Melbourneish thing to do.
Sydney at the MCG next Saturday night. It's a really nice game of football. So, Fritsch kicks six. They walk away and they go, okay, let's just put that in the 4 points in the bag and get on the plane and go home.
Do we leave Richmond and the Bulldogs to rock it tomorrow? Half because I think it would be disrespectful to only give a couple of minutes to what was an astonishing second half.
Yeah, but it's Friday night. It's a long time ago. We'll touch on it.
Happened.
Rocket.
Nice time for the Bulldogs. Round 7, where their midfield got dominated for the first time in the second half, and they didn't respond. So they had to go and review that. How do we have to respond as a midfield when they're on top of us? Because no midfield's been on top of them yet. Now was the first time it's happened. Richmond got their surge game going as they do, and Bulldogs had no answer.
I did feel that missing that goal at half time might have been a dangerous thing to do for the Bulldogs.
But albeit 25 points, you felt like in that second quarter, Richmond were going coming. Well. Going well.
Actually, Luke Hodge picked it up well on the commentary too. He was all over that. They did seem to have momentum and territory, and they just couldn't score. Whether or not that was going to hold up was going to be the challenge. So the Tigers did what the Tigers do. They're very, very good.
They are very good. There's a real sort of, finished?
I thought the moment late in the game where Cochin came off with a hamstring injury, he was sitting on the bench with a little smirk on his face.
He pushed himself real hard in that middle part of the game to get them going. He was very, very good.
I've done my job.
Yeah.
I'll miss a couple of weeks. Dusty, you come back in. Yeah. Just
there
keep
was,
us,
I agree with
just
you.
Just keep us rolling. Yeah. We're still here, so if you want to catch us if you can.
Tom Lynch.
Were you disappointed in Fremantle?
No, they were terrible.
Just quickly, were you disappointed in them?
I was extremely disappointed.
So the answer is yes.
Yes.
Just checking.
I was.
I was really disappointed with their performance.
Outstanding response by West Coast after the performance against Geelong, though.
Pick them. They're real easy to pick, West Coast.
But is that what
Justin Longmuir said? Let's just cool the jets a little bit on us. We're still a developing team.
Well, that's
we're not as far advanced as a lot of people think. Yeah. Maybe that's just true.
A little reminder from Tim Kelly yesterday.
Yeah, we'd like to see a bit more of that from Tim Kelly, I must admit. But just it was a
little
very
reminder
from him with his performance.
Mundy, Fyth and Brayshaw, a nice combination in the middle of the ground.
How good is Brayshaw? Oh, he's a good player.
It's not that good, couldn't get his team over the line.